Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Slam Fire Radio for episode 39.
Did he just say it's episode 39?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
Does he know it's actually episode 40?
I don't think he actually knows it's 40. No, it's written down there as 39, so I think he thinks it's 39.
It is episode 40 though, right?
I'm pretty sure it's episode 40, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I thought so.
I am one of your hosts, Trevor Furlott.
I'm McClatchy, the warning shot Matthew. May or may not be dyslexic.
Tighten your helmet and try again.
I am Owen, the warrior Flewelling.
No, tighten it tighter and try again.
No, I'm done, I'm good.
Okay, and who's the other guy?
Apparently I've already been introduced in a weird sort of imitation of myself.
If that was an imitation of you, yeah, that was pretty weird.
I do what
so
I can.
So welcome, January 16th. Well, why don't we jump right into it, and maybe Owen, you can tell us what you've been up to.
What have I been up to? Well, I finally got my barrel for my new AR.
Yay! That's the 20-inch, right?
Yeah.
The one in 300 blackout?
Yeah, exactly. yeah, that's the 7.5 in 5.56. Thankfully,
I was close.
I'm really actually getting a weird itch to make
there's a cream
unquote,
for that.
Make a quote unquote.
There's a cream for that.
Sniper AR.
You know what? After watching Lone
it's
Survivor,
Slipstream.
Yeah, rub some Slipstream on it. Okay. Owen, coming back to your comment about sniper type AR, have you seen the movie Lone Survivor?
I have not, but I would like to.
That's what he's carrying. It reminds me of the one I built for open or for three gun competition, but more tactical and less gamey, right? But same kind of handguard and stuff.
I'm watching a bunch of videos on YouTube and different things of footage from Afghanistan and Iraq, and I've seen that a lot with the sniper ones where they're running semi-automatics. A lot of them, they're not running bolt guns. I mean, some of them are, but a lot of the I'm not sure the correct terminology for it, but
marksman, sharpshooter.
The shorter range ones where they go in, they get in a spot, and they set up quick, and they're shooting a lot of stuff on the move and things
CQB.
Like that. It's
longer
not
CQB. Than CQB.
It's still sniping.
It's like
but
medium quarter combat. Service conditions.
I always confuse those two.
Right.
It's kind of that between real long-range sniping and what your regular carbine, assault rifle can do.
So like 400 to 500 meters kind of thing you're talking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, kind of in that middle range where you can still get decent, good enough accuracy out of an AR to do the job.
But having the semi-auto is a huge plus for rapid follow-up shots. And the other nice thing with it is, even if you do find yourself in a CQB situation, you can use it in that role.
Exactly.
Well, exactly. Now,
I would love to go with 300, but I'm not confident in its ability to really reach out. I think it's got the nickname 300 Dropout for a reason.
Yeah.
Well,
so
someday I'm going to build the 7.62 by 40.
Yeah.
Wilson tactical one. It's got the 7.62 projectile, but it's got a lot more kick behind it than the 300 Blackout. You take a 5.56 case, you only trim off 5 millimeters. And then jam a 7.62 bullet into it.
Yeah,
you gotta put those in backwards, right, to make them fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably go with just a 308.
308's a whole new platform now, though. Now you're talking AR-10.
Yeah, I realize that, but it is still an AR.
It's true.
I don't. What else can you do? That's.
Yeah.
I don't mind that because it's. I mean, I'm not like I'm going to be swapping.
That's right. It's not going to be your run and gun. It's going to be your.
It is dedicated.
Yeah, so you want to build, you're basically talking about building a bench rest AR-15 precision gun.
Right.
So when Bolivar realizes that the Krieger barrel he bought was for that purpose and not for service conditions, he'll probably sell it to you cheap when he realizes he made a mistake by buying a 12-pound barrel.
Except that he wants a 308, not a 223, so.
Well, then you want an AR-10.
That's, yeah, I think I said that a couple minutes ago.
You did, well, yep, you did.
Anyway, that's for a future time when maybe I have some money, maybe. Right now, I'm just having fun getting the rest of this together.
Cool. And how's your Secret Service post working out for you?
Good.
Are they still covering you properly?
Well, yeah, not too bad. I haven't actually seen them for a while.
They are doing good then.
Their job, yeah.
Okay, quickly tell them why before the listeners have an aneurysm.
I can hear them yelling at us right now, actually.
Tuesday night, I was elected as president of the Woodstock Pistol and Rifle Club.
Which is a polite way of saying you and your buddies staged a coup.
Well, I don't know about that, but it was definitely...
It was all diplomatic and whatnot.
Yep. So, that's about it. That's going to keep me very busy. Unfortunately, it's probably going to mean I'm going to have to cut back on my IPSC time come summer.
Quit.
Yeah. I hereby resign.
Well,
after the IPSC match, I'm back in.
Yeah. For me, I look at it and I go, yeah, because I don't really want to do this, but I just feel this is necessary to get our club headed in a certain direction, and I think in the long term it will be better.
An IPSC direction.
Well, yes and no.
Well, the first thing,
IPSC is part of it, but it's not the only.
No.
The only part of it, and it's going to be good for the club as a whole for all the shooting sports that people are interested in. But yes, IPSC is one of those.
How about you get rid of that silly rule about silhouette targets?
That is in our constitution, and I'll have to. It's going to have. It'll take me a year to even bring that up.
Yeah, you got to open it up at the next AGM.
Exactly.
Because what if law enforcement wanted to rent your range?
Well, they do. There's a provision in there for law enforcement.
Oh, how convenient.
Perfect. Yep. Let's all get deputized.
Yep. So.
Cool.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the only other way I can see it happening is if an IPSC target can be classified as a silhouette, or something like that. And then you could, I don't know if there'd be any way to put, kind of make an amendment to that until you could formally change it if... we want to shoot IPSC, but these are, considered a silhouette target. Therefore, we can't shoot IPSC because... So I don't know if that was some way I can work that, but we'll looking into it.
All right.
Cool. So is that it then?
That's it for me. Yeah.
All right.
Cool. I'll take a turn. Sure. Nothing really slow.
Perfect. All right. My turn. Yeah.
I did a bit more reloading for Mark Giroux. I think I've loaded more 9mm for him this winter than I did for myself. And SummerSlam administration stuff, the registration for SummerSlam, which is an IPSC level 3. Level 3 means there's more rounds shot in this particular match than a level 1 or a level 2.
It's like a power-up, right?
Yeah. It's an IPSC level 3 match with 300 rounds, 16 stages, 13 squads, about 9 guys per squad. We got 2 sets of dates this year, the 17th, 18th, or the 19th, 20th. It's not like pre-match and then regular match. It's all the same match. You can choose which set of dates works best for you. But you have to keep them together. You have to do 17th, 18th, or
19th, 20th.
19th, 20th, yeah. Yep. And cool. So I took over doing the registration for the match. And,
so basically nobody's showing up then because you're going to screw all the registrations up and no one will get their letter of invite?
I'm trying. Yeah. So emails trickle in. Emails, I've asked people to scan their registration form as a PDF, email it to me, and then send me the money by EMT. So far, everybody's remembered their password.
Well, that's cool. That doesn't hardly ever happen.
What's going, yeah. I guess the IPSC shooters and the listeners of CRR because remember when we were doing the rifle raffle? They would send me an EMT for their tickets and never the password. But anyway.
Yeah, way to go ahead and insult our listeners just like that. Good job.
Well,
man.
Usually it's
that's,
you.
That's how. But, well, hey. No, I'm trying to take the high
road.
And
to be fair, I said the listeners of CRR. I mean, some of them may have come over, but I don't know if all of them did. So,
right. That reminds
anyway,
me.
Yeah.
I need to petition the listeners for something.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I am in search of little gunpowder.
Just a little gun? I got a little gunpowder here.
A little gunpowder, yeah?
Just a little bit of it.
I need a lot of little gunpowder. And I can't find it anywhere online. I had a lead on a place that wasn't online, but I was told if I call them, they'll ship it to me. I call them, they didn't have any in stock. So I'm very lost. I really need some. I really want some anyway.
Well, if your luck is anything like mine, by the time this show airs, like 3 hours later, you'll have a lead.
Yeah.
Because that's how it always works for me. I ask, you know, ask for the papoose, and like 2 days later, I'd bought one, thanks to Thomas. So.
So if anybody knows where there is powder, even if it's at a little local, you know, gun shop somewhere, I will pay, you know, for you to pick it up for me and, you know, ship it to me and all that. And
who makes it?
I believe Hodgdon.
Okay. Have you checked their website to confirm that?
Confirm that they make it?
Yeah, that's their product.
I'm fairly certain it is.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just off top of my head, but
did you try Higginson's in Ontario? They're like the go-to place for the guys around here. They were doing bulk orders with those guys for years before I was even in shooting.
Okay. No, I don't know that I did.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. It is made by Hodgdon.
Okay. All right, so we'll finish on that squirrel moment during my segment. And Matthew, what did you do?
I went to the range last weekend.
As we all should have. It was like plus 10.
Oh, it was beauty. It was. It actually took me 3 tries and about half an hour to get to the range. And that's once I got there, because there's this little bit of an uphill slope to the driveway, and it was a skating rink. And just a regular skating rink, but one that was wet.
A high-capacity skating rink?
It was a high-capacity. It was crazy. So anyway, after some fancy driving and a lot of shoveling snow onto the ice to get it to get some more traction, got up there and played with the 70 PSS. That's the for Trevor Papoose.
Man.
So rung that out. It is fun. I need a new buffer for it. I completely destroyed the buffer that was in it because it was so old. It just completely shattered. So I destroyed that. So I just swapped it out for a buffer out of one of my other 795. So
you're talking that little piece of
plastic
inside the receiver that the bolt hammers against.
Yep.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't shot recently.
What's that?
It hadn't been shot in a while.
Oh, no, it hadn't been shot in quite a while. So, anyway, so I shot that quite accurate. Very, very happy with it. It is as accurate as my 795. So, you know, shorter barrel and pencil thin barrel. Well, not pencil thin, but like a regular contour 22 barrel as opposed to the thicker one that the 795s have. Makes no difference.
Is it, in fact, a tapered barrel?
It is not. It is a straight.
Straight thin barrel. Nice.
And very, like I said, very accurate. I shot it quite rapidly, put quite a few rounds through it, didn't warm up. I mean, I was kind of expecting it to get a little warm because it was so thin, but it's not. It doesn't get warm. So I'm very happy with it. It's not going to be just a special use kind of gun. It can be an everyday, all the time kind of gun. It works very well. No malfunctions whatsoever. In fact, the 795, both the 795s that I have, if I get a dud, my manual of arms calls for me to remove the magazine first and then rack the bolt 2 or 3 times before it'll pop out, because the extractor doesn't always grab the 22 shell when it hasn't fired. When it's fired, they always come out. But if it's a dud, sometimes it doesn't latch on hard enough. I don't understand why, but sometimes it does that. So all I've done is pull the magazine and then rack the thing a couple times and it pops out. With this one, I did that, and any time I got a dud, came out first time every time. So I don't have to pull the magazine anymore to do that. So it has an even better extractor than my 795s. So very happy about that. Very much liking the gun for sure. I'll be taking it out camping again this weekend with Curtis. Owen apparently wimping out. It's not minus 36, so he said, no, I'm not going. It's only going to be minus 8. So, no, unfortunately, he's busy. So Curtis, come along with me this time. We're going to go.
Well, I wasn't invited, actually.
You were, actually.
No, I wasn't.
I invited you tonight.
Right now, as you're speaking to us on the show.
I invited you earlier on text.
You didn't.
I'm sure I did. I should have. Maybe I didn't.
Smiley face and LOL and a just joking.
Owen. I didn't say that, you jerk.
Owen, don't let it upset you. You get used to not being invited after a while.
I'm not upset. I mean, if he wants
Trevor, you okay there, buddy?
If he wants to go crawl into a sleeping bag with another guy, that's fine.
Hey, you had enough last weekend, so.
So who was Little Spoon last weekend?
Let's not get into this again. Okay, so I continued at the range here. I played with my Beretta some more too, my 70, a little 22 pistol I won. Still loving it. Oh my goodness, I just can't get over this gun. It's on me. As soon as I get home, I stick it in my pocket, and it's always on. I love it. Shot my Axis. My Axis does not like the Norinco ammo that we get for the ARs. I put 5 rounds in, and of the 5 rounds, 2 went click. Put those 2 in the AR, and they fired off no problem. So they have very hard primers, apparently.
They do. The SU-16, when I did the trigger job with the Red Lion Precision Trigger, wouldn't fire them.
Yeah. So anyway, that stuff is definitely relegated to the AR, and for good reason as well, because I got a whopping 3-inch group with those 3 shots.
Well, so. You probably warped your barrel, too.
No, because then I... funny. Then I put in... I actually put 10 more rounds through it of my reloaded stuff and kept all of that stuff well under an inch at 100 yards. So very happy with the Axis. Still, my reloads didn't go bad. I thought they went bad after a while. That's what I tell my wife anyway. You know, ammo goes bad. I got to shoot it. I got to buy more, right?
Yeah, the powder like gets a vinegar type smell after like 3.5 months or something.
Days, I believe. Days is what you're looking for, yeah. Yeah.
So if you don't shoot it, you lose your money.
That's right. So you got to shoot it and then spend more money on stuff.
Cool.
Basically. So, and then I shot the AR, which of course is always fun. So, other than that, still trying to buy a Glock. apparently it's hard to buy a Glock these days. I've been trying for ever since I announced that I had been, you know, ordered this
Glock. You bought one.
Yeah, I have heard nothing from this guy on CGN. Just basically he fell off the planet. And then to make matters worse, you know how you can go on there and you can check somebody's profile and see if they've been on recently? Well, he's been on recently. He's been updating his other posts. And so I'm like, I see you're online. Did you still want to sell that Glock? Nothing. 3 days later, no response. So he clearly doesn't want to sell me his Glock. So anybody out there who's got a Gen 3 Glock and a bunch of mags you want to sell? Yeah, I'd be happy to spend money on it if only you would sell it to me.
And people, you need to do this soon. Because I want to buy his Ruger.
So, anyway.
That's right. We never did talk about that. What is the plan for the SR9?
Oh, I'll sell it, probably.
It's mine.
I will sell it after I shoot the Glock quite a bit and realize that I like the Glock more. If I don't, then I'm just going to sell the Glock again and keep the Ruger.
So I want to get another 17, actually, myself, for my bug out bag. I want to get a small gun case, the smallest pistol case that you can get.
Yeah, lock it up in there and just leave it.
Yeah, throw a lock on the gun, throw a lock on the pistol case, throw it in the range or in the bug out bag, and then I won't have to worry about making it to the safe for the other one. Or if I do make it to the other one, well, then great, I'm leaving the house with 2 guns.
Sure, it's a great idea. Anyway, as soon as I announced that I was getting a Glock, Luke Giroux, best listener ever, apparently, I contacted him today.
And what was that for, Owen?
Apparently, he doesn't like Luke.
Apparently.
No, Matthew's just sucking up, that's all.
Well, Luke, see, I contacted Luke today because I was thinking, well, the other Glock that I wanted to buy was coming with a holster that I needed. But now if I get another Glock, clearly it won't come with a holster that I need. At least probably it won't. So I contact Luke and say, Luke, what can you suggest from LHS holsters? Because, of course, he's a distributor for them here in this area. And he goes, oh, don't worry, I got you covered. Got one ordered for you already. So basically, as soon as he heard I was ordering a Glock, he's like, I better get Matthew a holster for that. He's going to need it.
Okay, that's awesome. Customer service, that providing you with things you didn't ask for.
That's right. So anyway, he's got a rapid... Sorry, Owen?
Or didn't know that you needed.
Yeah, I didn't even know I needed it, yeah.
Luke, what do I need next? Send me a message. Let me know what it's going to cost.
Right. Anyway, well,
I would just be happy with the holster I've already ordered. But.
Well, yeah.
No, that's circumstances beyond his control.
Still funny, though.
Yeah.
A rapid draw apparently is on its way, and I've had him order me a Condor as well. That's the in-the-waistband concealment holster in case I ever want to shoot, like, IDPA or something like that. So,
awesome.
Yep. So anyway, I'm excited about that. If only I could find a Glock.
They got all kinds of them down here in Woodstock.
I want one for a good price, though. Yeah. That means used.
Yeah, it's actually, it's not a bad price, but you're right. Yeah, you can do better with used.
I'm in the kind of 650-ish range right now, and those usually come with a couple of mags. So it's that's kind of my price range is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's me. So Trevor, run us through these upcoming events, and then we can move on to our... Oh, we got some news too, don't we?
So, T-shirt orders. Continue to send your payments, please, to slamfireradio@gmail.com. EMT is preferred. PayPal, we could make happen if we need to. The price is $25. Don't forget to include your full name, mailing address, and what you ordered, as in, you know, size and color, in the message with the EMT or the PayPal. Next event, we have the charity shoot. It's going to be on June 21st at the Registered Gush Gun Club. Steve Lee is rumored to be attending said event. We're going to make it a full day of shooting. We'll do a little bit of trap shooting, or what do you call that, Owen? I'm going to shoot some skeets. Yeah, we're going to shoot some skeets in the morning. And we'll have a small bore silhouette shoot, just a gallery style, one distance, knock down the one animal, go put up the other ones, and go through it that way.
We're allowed to use ARs on that, right? And 300 blackout?
That's what small bore means, yes.
Yep.
I'm bringing the shotgun.
Then we'll just do a little bit of free time on the range with rifles shooting up to 200 meters, maybe farther if our 500 meter berm is complete by that time. And then we'll finish the day with an IPSC style mini match at the back of the range in our pistol section. After that, we'll make our way to we'll probably have some kind of after day wrap up. Bonfire, wobbly pops, barbecue
with a concert.
Yeah, and then an acoustic concert by Steve Lee. So that's what we did last year, and it was phenomenal. Then we have an update on the Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course. We're aiming for August 2nd and 3rd this summer for that course. It's going to be 2 days. Day one will be a defensive handgun course with Mag 40 instructor Tommy Nelson of the Gun Dudes. Day two will be an IPSC mini match, and we're going to use some of the best stages from SummerSlam for that. And I say mini match, but actually, to get us out of having to pay 2 days membership or 2 days rental on the range, if we open that match up to the public and make it a regular level two IPSC match, then we can just squad our people accordingly. And
beauty.
Yeah, so I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to end up on the schedule as a regular level two.
So have we? Do we have any sort of concrete date, or is August 2nd and 3rd still fairly flexible?
It's still tentative. Tommy either found out today. I said tentative.
Yeah, tentative. That's the correct word.
You okay, Owen? You're right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Do you want to come up to the front of the class and do this?
It sounded really funny.
All right.
There was no N in it when you said it.
Tentative?
No, there was an N in it.
It sounded tentative to me.
Why are we arguing about this?
Shoot the squirrel already, please.
Hey, he made fun of me. I get to make fun of him. That's the rule.
What if I ever made fun of you? But admiration and respect.
And Matthew the turncoat, last show. You show up. The second you show up, he's just like, suck up Trevor.
We ganged up on you something fierce. It was the best show ever.
I was awesome.
It's because you're a lead host. Lead host always gets it worst.
Why don't they like me?
Oh, we like
I'm
you.
I'm a nice guy.
No, you're not.
Anyway, what was I saying? Tentatively, it's scheduled for August 2nd and 3rd. Tommy's going to find out about his vacation either today or tomorrow. He started the process for his passport. So he's still obviously planning on coming if he's getting a passport. That or he's going to Mexico. I don't know. Anyway.
I thought we were smuggling him over.
Well, whatever the case may be, he is going to come on the show when it's official to give us a little bit of an update as to what's what.
Cool.
So, and for the American listeners who are considering coming to the charity shoot, you can bring your handgun, provided it has a barrel length of 4 1/4 inches or longer.
Why don't we tell them in millimeters? Because they'll never understand that.
106. So, Paul Lathrop was told, no, he couldn't bring a gun into Canada. I'm like, Chris Tilley shot the Canadian Nationals. We had all kinds of Americans shoot the Canadian Nationals, and they didn't do it with a slingshot. So whoever he was talking to, get off the glue.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Americans can bring their guns into Canada. It's no problem.
The key is not calling up and going, can I bring my guns to Canada? But
you I'm call them up and say, Canada, what paperwork do I need? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like when you get in a car, when you hit a moose on the highway, you have to say to your insurance company, a moose hit me.
That's right. Yeah, you got to say it right. Yeah. Now, that being
bring
said,
my guns, what do I need?
Yeah, that not
is, yeah, the course is full.
Yeah, not only do you need to bring a gun with the barrel length of longer than 4 1/4, but please only bring 10-round magazines or else you'll get in trouble too.
Oh, good point, Matthew. Yeah.
See, we got silly laws here.
Yeah. They dumb. The course is full. However, you can get on the waiting list. There's already a few people on there. The next thing that we're going to be doing, the next kind of upcoming event, is the multi-gun. And that's always a podcaster's favorite. And it's August 16th and 17th. And we'll do 12 stages this year.
That's just an arbitrary number you pulled out of the air, huh? 12. 12 sounds good. Let's do 12.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not like 6 one day, 6 the next. I'm sure I'll do something like, I don't know.
8 one day and 4 the next. Cause
I was thinking 10 and 2.
10 and 2 is good. That's how you're supposed to drive, right? 10 and 2?
I'm trying to decide now. See, I have 2 ARs. At that point, I'll have 2 ARs to choose
dual
from.
Dual wheeled. Dual
three.
Wheeled.
3, actually.
Yep.
Oh, my
Put goodness. One in a holster.
I could. So you, well, this short one, I could. You could shoot it. I mean, it's a pistol-length barrel, right?
Yeah, so make it a handgun. And then the Beowulf, load that up with shot instead of a slug. That can be your shotgun.
I could shoot the 3-gun with 50 Beowulf. What's a big enough bullet? They might count for 2 shots.
That's right. Bullseye or snake eyes all the way through.
We're into the news now.
Right.
And Owen, you can bring this to us because you put it in the show notes, so we don't have like a whole lot on it, but tell us what you know.
So word on the street is that the NFA is working with, I assume, an MP, probably a conservative MP, though they didn't actually say that, but they're working on a private members bill to de-restrict or non-restrict.
All handguns.
No, the AR-15. Oh,
well, that's cool, too.
De-restrict, that's the proper term.
Sure.
So
that'd be great. You imagine? That would be I mean, it would only make sense, too. Any AR-15 with a barrel length longer than 18.5 inches should be an unrestricted rifle in the first place.
All right, guys. It's time for the main topic of this week's show, and it is our favorite black rifle. Hopefully, your favorite black rifle. And if
the
it's
SKS,
not,
right?
SKS. If it's not. If
it's I spray painted mine black just so that I could call it a black rifle.
Well, if the AR-15 is not your favorite black rifle, hopefully after this segment, it will be. We've invited the owner of the Crusader Podcast Network, which we're a proud member of, and owner of Crusader
Weapons.
Well,
proud is quite the word there.
Well, I'm proud to be on it.
Oh, sounds about right.
So, Joe Chetwood, welcome to Slamfire Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
I think it's the first time you've been on our show, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's the first time I've talked to him. I know that. And I started us off great, didn't I?
You spoke to him before.
Did I?
Yeah, you were on a Skype call with him way back when we were talking about the inception of the network.
Oh, that's completely possible. I don't believe I was present for most of that conversation, even though I was there.
I think we had everybody except for George, maybe.
That doesn't matter. Let's talk about AR-15s.
Yeah, let's do that.
That's
well,
cool.
Let's talk about Joe. Joe, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, Crusader Weaponry?
Okay, well, I'm certified gunsmith. I have my degree actually in gunsmithing. I've worked for the U.S. government as an armorer and got to learn all sorts of cool toys like grenade launchers and belt fed machine guns and stuff.
So just your typical fare then?
Just the typical stuff.
The kind of stuff you would see out in the woods when you're hunting deer kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, but the one thing we got to do an awful lot is rebuild M16s, but AR-15s to suit their needs. And, you know, they're worn out, need to have this replaced and that replaced, and you end up rebuilding the whole rifle. So after coming away from that, I said, you know what, it's time to go into business for myself. So I took what I knew and ran with it.
Excellent. So the government kind of paid for your education, and then you turned that into a day-to-day job?
Kind of, yeah.
Nice. So. Nice. A lot of guys get out, and they don't. They weren't in a field where they have transferable skills, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like that can be tough.
Yeah, if you blow it up for a living, it's really hard to do that on Wall Street.
Right? Thanks, Trevor. That's great. No, editing is my – I love editing. That's awesome.
You're welcome.
Jerk face is what you are. So, Joe, you're like an AR-15 expert then.
Pretty much.
All right, then, so what was that, huh?
It sounded like something fun.
That was definitely a 5-pound AR-15 trigger pull, and I'm no expert.
I was racking the bolt, but sure.
Oh, okay. I'll do the trigger. Okay, Joe, what's this?
Okay, that would be the trigger.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, he nailed it. You are
an expert.
I've just turned on my red dot sight. What is the make and model?
So he's a gun doctor, not a gun psych, gun psychic.
There you go.
Gotcha. Oh, it makes more sense now. Okay.
And Joe, your company Crusader Weaponry builds AR type rifles, correct?
Correct.
And you have just the one kind. What do you got?
No, we do AR-15s. We do AR-10s, and of course
we were just talking about AR-10s, weren't we?
Yeah.
And what's that?
Sell Owen an AR-10. Why does he want one? Why does he need one?
Why don't you need one?
There you go. Love it. Yeah, problem solved.
That is the correct answer.
All right. Well, we've been talking about them. Joe, could you tell our listeners what an AR-15 rifle is?
Absolutely. An AR-15 is actually the civilian version of a military rifle. And what that means is you can't just go to the store and buy it full auto and ready to shoot up something. It is a semi-automatic sporting rifle.
So if it's an AR-15, then automatically you know it's semi-automatic.
Absolutely.
The fully automatic ones, or the ones that you can select between fully automatic and semi-automatic, are not called AR-15s?
Those are M16s.
Okay. So then, would that be, and this was a question for my wife, what's the difference between an AR-15 and, say, the quote-unquote assault rifle? Is an M16 an assault rifle?
In the legal sense, yes, because it has the full automatic capability. And, of course, since the AR-15 does not have full auto capability, it is not an assault rifle.
So just because it looks like it doesn't mean it is?
No. I mean, you want to get right down to it. It shoots the same bullet as a bolt action 223, which means it's a varmint hunting gun. Right.
Yeah, basically it's a gun for prairie dogs and coyotes.
Yeah.
So just because it's black and just because it has a pistol grip and a shoulder thing that goes up, that doesn't make it an assault rifle?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. But come on now, AR is right in, and everybody knows AR stands for assault rifle.
No, it's not. It stands for Armalite Rifle.
And Armalite is who? What did they do? Why are they special?
They are the first ones to manufacture it, to produce it. Basically, they had Eugene Stoner, the creator of the AR-10, working for them, trying to engineer this. So they're the originals. Yes, it's been made by mostly Colt after its inception, but Colt bought it from Armalite.
So Eugene Stoner, who was the designer, was working for Armalite?
Yes.
Okay. And the military version was called the M16, but the civilian version is called the AR-15.
Right.
All right. So we know what AR stands for. What does the 15 stand for?
Good question. Throughout all of my training, that has actually never come up.
It's like the Glock 17. It holds 17 bullets, so that's why they call it the Glock 17, right?
No, it's not.
No.
No, the Glock is, you know, the 17 because it was the 17th patent by the designer Gaston Glock. But was this Eugene Stoner's 15th design or something? Like,
my best guess, and I actually did try to look this up, and came up with Bumpkiss. My best guess is it's his 15th, or a, going back to the M16, it would be the 16th version of the rifle. The AR-10 being the 10th version, you know. In other words, he went through several versions trying to get everything worked out, and the 10th one finally worked for the 308.
So there you just answered my next question. The difference between an AR-15 and an AR-10 is what?
The big difference is the caliber. AR-10 is a 308 or 7.62x51. caliber rifle, and the M16 or AR-15 is a 5.56 millimeter or 223 is the common version.
Oh, okay. So the 10 is the smaller number but the bigger bullet. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, it was.
Yeah, because the numbering for Glocks makes sense too.
Well, of course.
I'm just making fun of Trevor because he loves Glocks. That's all.
We all do.
Huh? But it actually does make sense for the AR-10 to have the bigger caliber because it was originally produced in 308, because that's what the military was using, was the M14, which was a 308. So he made a rifle in the same caliber they were using, and the Air Force whined about the recoil. And
sounds like something a fighter pilot would whine about, right?
Yeah, how can we possibly put up with all this recoil?
And, well, let me tell you, my spaghetti 22 arms of today thank them, because I really prefer the 223.
Please.
We can make that manageable for you. Trust me.
So how then does somebody tell the difference between an AR or modern-day sporting rifle I think we covered this. We talked about why an AR is not an assault rifle, and why a modern-day sporting rifle is not an assault rifle, and that was the select fire thing, right?
Right.
So,
and really quickly, for the really new listeners and who are fishermen, we won't hold that against you, mostly, probably. We probably will, but anyway. Full auto, what we mean is when you pull the trigger, it's like in the movies. It just goes blah, 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 blah until the mag's empty. Or, sorry,
pew,
the clip.
Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah, because you wouldn't understand. Yeah, the clip. No, magazine.
Yeah, the clip, yeah. Yeah.
Semi-automatic means that when you pull the trigger, only one shot's fired. It's like any other hunting rifle that's out there. You pull the trigger, one shot goes. You pull the trigger again, another shot goes. So
that brings us into our next one then. Joe, how do these rifles work? What kind of internals, mechanisms, like what are the mechanics of these things?
You actually have a couple different versions. The original and the one that I prefer is still the direct gas impingement. In other words, it's going to bleed off a little bit of the gas pressure from the bullet traveling down the barrel to actually operate the action and load the next cartridge into the chamber. The other one is a piston-driven, which it's still bleeding off a little bit of gas in order to hit a piston to work the action. And that version was really only conceived of because of sloppy guns that didn't work right in the first place. So let's fix it by putting a piston on it.
Yeah, let's fix it by making it more complicated instead of just, you know, cleaning the first one.
Exactly. Well, not just cleaning it, but I won't name any manufacturer names, but there's a couple down here in the States that, they'll have this part at this end of the tolerance spectrum and this part at the other end of the spectrum, and they have stuff all over the place.
Right, sure. And then, yeah, you're going to get problems then. It's just not going to work right.
Exactly. General Motors is making rifles?
Just about.
Okay, so one has moving parts, then the piston one has moving parts. There's actually a piston in there that gas pushes on, and that pushes something else, and the other one is just a tube that gas blows down?
It's just a tube that gas blows down and hits what's called the carrier key, which is bolted to the carrier, and it makes it go backwards. It carries the spent casing backwards.
And it carries it.
And ejects it out of the ejection port. And the buffer tube and spring push it back forward, loading another casing off of the magazine, not clip the magazine, and into the chamber, and you are now ready to pull the trigger again.
Okay.
That's cool. Now, it's funny you talk about the piston-driven. It's still amazing how prevalent the idea that the piston-driven AR is going to be more reliable. I was talking to a person recently, somebody who lives down in the Oklahoma area, and I asked him, okay, well, you live in the States, he carries a concealed firearm, and I said, so do you have an AR yet? He says, no, not yet, I'm getting one, though, but I'm definitely making sure I get one of the piston ones, because they're way more reliable. And we sat and we talked for about 5 to 10 minutes, and I explained to him how, actually, no, the direct impingement is probably the way you want to go instead of the piston-driven. And I think I convinced him by the end of the conversation, but it's just amazing that everybody thinks that the piston-driven is just so much better, even though, really, I would say most people who know what they're talking about are going to say the direct impingement is actually the better system.
I think, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that may come from they believe that the piston is more reliable because the AK uses a piston, and also because it's technically cleaner, is it not?
Technically cleaner, yes. And for a gun that isn't put together right, it's going to take it from crappy to completely reliable. So in that sense, it has a small grain of truth to it, but only a small one. If you have a well-built direct impingement rifle, it's going to be 99% reliable no matter what you do to it. Part of me thinks some of this is coming back from our guys over in the sandbox, because they do have to worry about the addition of sand in their rifle 24 hours a day. And the moon dust they have over there, and that can cause some issues for them if they're not, you know, making sure to keep it clean 100% of the time. You know, they get back to base, strip down the rifle, clean it, put it back together, you're ready to go again. But we won't hold that against our Army.
I would think the piston would be more problematic in that case, because there's more lubrication points, so there's going to be more points for the sand to adhere to, more moving parts.
Actually, you don't lubricate the piston.
Yeah, well, and the guys aren't lubricating anything over there to keep the sand from sticking to it, isn't that true?
Sticking it, pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much running dry guns.
Which causes its own set of problems, but...
Yep. So, okay, what about bullets? What are these things? You know, we know that the AR-10 and the AR-15, traditionally the AR-15 or M16 is a 5.56 and the AR-10 is a 308 or 7.62x51. But is that it? I got two choices for the AR-15 or one choice for the AR-15?
Oh no, we have tons of choices. There's been a lot of moving in the industry. Coming back from just complaints from the guys coming back from the sandbox. And a lot of that, they have their own set of issues with what they're shooting and barrel lengths. And a lot of them are using the M4, which has a 14-inch barrel length. And it's actually not enough length for the bullet to speed up enough to have its desired impact. It just pokes a .22 caliber hole in and out.
Yeah, that's significantly less effective than, say, a .308 at the same speed.
Yes. Much less effective, which is kind of their problem. So they started looking at other calibers. You know, is there something else we can do in the same gun? And the answer is yes. There's the 6.8. There's 6.5.
There's 50 Beowulf.
I'd love 50 Beowulf. Sign me up for that one. Let's have an AR that'll bring down an elephant. I'm all for it.
If it'll bring down an elephant, it'll bring down anything smaller than an elephant.
Yes, it will.
Right? And, you know, never shoot a large caliber.
And the one behind him, and the one behind that.
You know, like they said in Lone Survivor, never shoot a large caliber man with a small caliber bullet.
There's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
So you were talking about earlier how you maintained firearms for the military for quite a while, and you said, you know, certain parts would wear out quicker than others. What were some of the things that you saw wear out most quickly in an AR? What kind of thing would the average shooter have to watch for?
Average shooter is going to have to look out for springs, honestly.
Springs, yeah.
You know, extractor springs is probably going to be the first one to have issue because it's doing work every time.
Right.
You may run into hammer springs that need to be replaced because it's just not quite setting off each primer.
So once you start getting light primer strikes is when you'd look at that. I suppose it just makes sense that once you start having extraction issues, the first thing to look at would be your extractor spring.
Yes, replace that as soon as you can.
What about jumping right into one of the extra power extractor springs right off of the bat?
Yeah, why
not? Will that increase both reliability and longevity, or is it just increasing reliability?
Increasing longevity, probably.
Okay.
That's cool, because I got one in mine.
Yeah, it's not going to have to do as much work, so it's not. I mean, it's the constant working of the spring that wears it out, so right. If it doesn't have to do quite as much because it's always nice and tight up against there, then it'll last a little bit longer, and that's the only real advantage.
I've got one, but I wasn't able to get it in. It was really hard to compress to stick the pin in there, but
I can show you how. There's a trick.
Oh, excellent, because I've got one for my NEA.
I probably forget what the trick is, but I'm sure I'll lose your spring
sure
for you.
On you. That'll, huh? Wait. Okay, now, you mentioned M4, which brings us to another one of our questions, and that was, are all AR-15s the same size? And I'm referring to barrel length here.
Okay. No, there's the M4, like I said, is a 14-inch, which down here in the States, you have to have all sorts of special permission and $200 tax stamps and stuff for just to have.
We just buy them. That's how that works, yeah.
We love rubbing that in. We really do. We can't help it. It's our only up on you guys, basically, is that we can have any barrel length AR we want without any hassle.
But Joe can open carry any day.
Yeah, see, that's his back, yeah. Right? We always lose that one.
So M4 is 14 and a half.
14 and a half. Your average carbine is going to be 16. We build rifles with 18, 20, 24-inch, so you have a good variety of barrel lengths.
Okay.
So here's a question. If someday I decide to do a long-range AR build, what would be the optimal barrel length? Probably be in 308.
308.
So right now I have a 14.5-inch is kind of my standard, quote-unquote, battle rifle. I'm in the process of building a 7.5-inch, which is just
because he likes the velocities of 22 Magnum, basically, is why he's doing that.
Yeah.
Basically because my wife can't handle the longer gun just because of the weight. So, yeah, not that it's overly heavy, but anyway, it's convenient and cool. But eventually I can see kind of rounding out the trio with something a little longer range. What is the optimal barrel length? Or is there? Maybe I don't need to be super long in order to get the accuracy.
That's all going to depend on how you do it.
Okay.
20 to 24-inch is usually your long range.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it has that little additional stability put into it. But out of the rifles we build here, we're ringing the 1,000-yard gong with 16-inch carbines.
Really? Nice. Yeah.
Mm.
So really, how big is this gong? Is it the size of Texas or just the size of Idaho?
No, I believe at that range, it is a Sasquatch.
Oh, Sasquatch range. Yeah, Sasquatch size. That's a very nice size. That's 1,000 yards, you say? That is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Very cool. Awesome. So what else do we need to know about these AR-15 rifles?
Well, here, let's go into... Okay, yeah, sorry. Go ahead and answer that if you don't mind. if there is anything else to add.
The only thing we have left is the fact that they're basically the Legos of the gun world. You can change them to anything you want. You can change literally everything on the gun.
With aftermarket parts, yeah. No, I basically did that. My entire gun is aftermarket parts. I had the pleasure, the honor of being the recipient of a listener donated AR-15 build, and nice. The listener sent me every part that I needed except for the rear sight, the barrel, and the lower. Everything else was donated. Just people had spare parts, and so they sent them to me, and I put a rifle together with. So it's definitely a Franken gun, but it works very well now that it's been wrung out. We had some issues with it when we started off, but it's working very nicely now.
Yeah, I don't know if there are two parts on that gun from the same manufacturer.
I do not believe there are.
So it's a true Franken beast.
Oh, yep. My goodness, yes, in every sense of the word.
Hey, as long as it works, that's all that matters.
It does, yeah. No, it's... Now, we had some issues early on. It had a short barrel, an 11.5-inch barrel, and we could not get it to group better. What did we end up with at one point? 16 MOA? Yeah. It was an 8-inch group at 50 yards.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, so what was the issue there? Off the top of your head, would there be something that we could look at to fix that, or was that just kind of nature of the beast when you talk about barrels that short?
That's kind of nature of the beast because you're taking a rifle bullet and putting it in a barrel short enough that it doesn't have time to stabilize, so it's coming out kind of like when a football starts to yaw. It's not quite spinning perfectly. It's almost wobbling through the air.
Right.
You're doing that almost on purpose.
Gotcha. Okay.
That being said, my 10.5 was more accurate than your...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. I've seen some very short ARs that are fairly accurate. I mean, quite a bit more accurate than mine was, that's for sure. But I guess, you know, if you get the stars to align just right and all that good stuff, then...
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if it's a good barrel, even at 11.5, it can still shoot pretty good. But it's... Right.
Polygonal rifling, would that make a difference in that shorter barrel? Would you prefer to have that over standard cut rifling?
I prefer the polygonal... Anyway,
so you're from Utah then as well. Oh no, polygonal, not polygamy. Dude. Right? Yeah. Sorry, my bad.
Bad joke, dude.
It's all he knows is bad jokes. I'm sorry.
dear. Oh, dude. Yeah, that's this 7.5-inch barrel that I have is a polygonal rifling.
That probably makes quite a bit of difference in it then.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what kind of accuracy you get with that, Owen.
Yeah, me too.
Should be fun. Cool. Well, I had a question earlier, but Trevor cut me off. I can't remember what it was.
And now you know how it feels.
Switch.
It's all right. I don't mind. So, Joe, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I don't know. Yeah. What was the last question? I don't even remember what the last question was.
Well, the last question was whether or not they were all the same size, and it was a barrel length question.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Let's talk about, I mean, we've dumbed this down quite a bit. Not, I don't want to say dumb it down, but it's too late. I did. And I'm not going to edit it because I only edit Joe because he's cool and none of us else are. But we've kind of spoken very basically of the AR. We've only got about 4 or 5 minutes left, but let's talk about some of the higher end ARs. What do you recommend, Joe, for you know, maybe competition, maybe stuff for people who are heading over to do actual combat? What type of higher end ARs are there out there, and what would you recommend?
Well, I would recommend a Crusader rifle personally.
I didn't see that coming.
There's some other good ones out there, but
Crusader they do make good rifles. In fact, I believe Stan's still quite happy with his broadsword, right?
Longbow.
Yeah.
I want the broadsword.
What's the broadsword?
Broadsword is the 308 carbine.
Oh, okay. And the longbow is the rifle version.
308, right. Yeah, really long rifle version.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. He has the full 24-inch barrel and everything. It's an absolute beast.
Oh, it's a 1,000-yard gun. I mean.
Oh yeah, easy.
Yeah.
So it's a 16-inch 223 then, basically.
Not as much as it's a 24-inch 308, but you're close.
Well, you were just talking about shooting the Sasquatch at 1,000 yards with a 2-3 16-inch carbine, but...
No, that was a 308 carbine.
Oh, that was a 308. Oh, okay. Well, then that makes more sense.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Go ahead, Trev.
What features do you like on an AR, Joe? Anything that you absolutely must have on every AR that you own?
Besides sights. Besides a rear sight. Walking Dead, anyone? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started.
Like, I'll give you an example. Owen and I, if it's an air, it's got to have a bad lever from Magpul. I mean, we, you know.
Really? Well,
yeah. Can't live without the bad lever.
I actually, yeah. I agree with the bad lever, but not necessarily the Magpul one now.
Yeah, he's found a new one that's better.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I now have a Troy Industries, and it's much better.
Great. There's more money that I got to spend. So, but that's what we're talking about. We love those bolt releases. I even had a kind of a same kind of bolt release set up on the trigger guard of my CZ858. But is there anything like that, Joe, that you know? But then again, you've got a military background and you were trained to run them the way that they were designed.
For me, it's going to come down to probably the furniture. I mean, I really like my Myad grip.
That's on all my guns too.
Yeah. As far as stocks, it kind of depends on the mission of the rifle for me. That's kind of what I did when I designed all of our models, is go through each one has a purpose to it. The one thing I think I probably wouldn't be without is a battle comp.
Okay.
That one little chunk of metal on the end of a barrel will make an AR-15 feel like you're shooting a 22 long rifle.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And the 308 will feel almost exactly like a 5.56.
Wow.
That's cool.
So, but have you ever pulled the trigger on one without hearing protection?
Yeah, that'll hurt.
I don't want to do that at all. No.
Yeah. I did it once in a match with my STI. My muffs came off, and I didn't stop myself, and I regretted it for 3 days.
What's that?
Exactly.
Okay, I've got two more. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I did that with a 12 gauge and didn't hear in one ear for about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Oh. I got two more questions for you, and then we got to let you go because our time is up. Okay. The first one is train derailment there because I can't remember what it was. The second one is Slipstream. Tell us about Slipstream.
Oh, yeah. That's the gun lube that we produce here. It's a combination of a good synthetic gun oil that's good enough by itself, but we kick it up with an actual nanoparticle. It's a dry component that we put into it that is the real lubricant behind it. It's the same stuff that NASA uses on the fuel pistons.
I was just going to say, not the Challenger, right? They didn't use it on the Challenger?
I sure hope they didn't. No. Heavy industry also uses it in their bearings and everything because nothing else will take all that pressure.
That's cool. Yeah, we run Slipstream I think all three of us run Slipstream in our guns. Some other stuff too, but Slipstream is that's my go-to lube. I love it. It works great. I think Owen does well. I think Trevor's kind of, he does the frog lube thing.
I've been eating Slipstream since before you were even into guns. I bought frog lube.
Before I was into guns. I was into guns way before you were.
The oil and the grease is in my guns. And Joe, tell us the difference about the application of the oil and the grease, when you would use the oil and when you would use the grease, please.
Okay. Oil I would use just like you would any other gun oil. Nothing special going on there. The grease, I really like using a combination of it, especially on my pistol rails. I like using, for instance, grease on the frame rails and oil on the slide rails. Just that combination seems to do better than using either one by themselves.
I'm going to try that.
Yeah, like for the Glock, for example, I used to drop the oil in the trigger group and the grease on the rails on the frame.
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely.
I'm going to try the combo next on my SR.
next time I get it out to clean it. I remembered the other question. Please put to bed this this conflict we've had about the forward assist and press checks on an AR.
Forward assist and press checks.
Yeah, are press checks a bad idea? And is the forward assist of any use on an AR at all?
Okay. It has its place. The forward assist definitely does. I have seen guns dirty enough during classes and other applications to actually just barely not go into battery. So once you get that, you know, a tap of the forward assist and it's back in business and you're
right,
ready to
go. You're talking about during a mag change though, right, Joe? No,
I'm talking middle of the magazine chunk. It doesn't quite go forward.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. And a little tap of the forward assist to send it home.
Yeah. They're rare.
It beats a tap rack, right?
It beats a tap rack, yes. And as for a press check, if you think there may be a round in the chamber, it's, you know, I would definitely quickly check instead of just assuming it is and pulling the trigger.
So for like an admin reload or something, you know, you put your mag in, you know, you close the bolt, and you're like, did it actually strip one off? You know, just real quick, pull the bolt back a bit, check it, and then you slam, you hit the forward assist a couple times to make sure the bolt closed again, right?
That sounds like an awful lot of steps to...
Oh.
in the battery there, yeah, that's... Yeah.
But I mean, this is something you would do at the beginning of the day. This isn't something you'd do in the heat of the moment kind of thing.
Yeah, your first mag on the range or your first mag at work sort of thing.
Yeah, that would be, you know, one of the two each his own type of thing. But it depends on how well you trust your rifle. You know, I know mine when I... Yeah, the one I worry about is did I actually get the magazine far enough up and you know, give it a tap and make sure that it's not barely hanging out so when I close the bolt, it drops out the magazine well.
So embarrassing when that happens.
It is, and it only takes once for you to go, oh, man, now I got to pick up my magazine off the ground, and I'm totally embarrassed. I will never do this again. But, cool. Yeah. That's
so basically you've just muddied up the water here. You haven't given us any solid answers, so that's fantastic. That's great. Thank you. It's exactly the kind of controversy we live for here on Slam Fire. But anyway, our time is up.
One more thing that we might want to mention for sure. Just going back to the slipstream, which is the greatest lubricant on earth. If people would like to get that, they can get that in Canada. They don't, you know, Canadian distributor for that is Press Check Ventures.
Yes.
So just throw a free plug in there. If people, you know, after hearing this episode go, oh, man, I want to try that.
And they should, because it's amazing lubricant. Because
it is very good. You
know, and it's funny.
Just love how you guys turned our Air 15 episode to a slipstream commercial. That's great.
Doing it for Joe.
Joe wants some sales, man.
Yeah, doing it for Joe. Anyway, Trevor, wrap us up. We are 6 minutes over budget.
Right. Well, Joe, on behalf of my two less than esteemed colleagues, I'd like to thank you very much for trying to dispel some of the myths out there in the both gun community and non-gun community about the AR-15. Your information is invaluable, Joe. Hopefully we get you on sometime. Maybe we'll have to steal you and we'll have our very own gun doc segment.
Hey, that's okay with me too.
Because I haven't heard you on that other show, Polite Podcast or Polite, what do they call themselves now?
It doesn't matter. Not important.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'll get it right.
They just changed it, didn't they?
Yeah, I'll get it right in the shout outs. Yeah. So, yeah, you haven't been on there for a while, so maybe we'll have to snag you once in a while and do our own gun doc thing.
Okay.
We'll have to give it a different name, though, but anyway.
Yeah, but, gun physician.
There you go.
Socialist medicine gun physician, because, you know, we're in Canada, of course.
Yeah, well, he'll do it for free then, right?
That's right.
Well, thank you very much, Joe.
Hey, anytime. I'm glad to do it.
Well, I'd like to thank Joe Chetwood again. That was awesome. We might have to have somebody else come on some other time, talk about another type of weapon. Maybe we can get somebody come on to defend the virtues of
swords.
The 1911.
I'll talk about swords.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is a gun They make
gun swords, you know. There are swords that are guns, too.
I just really like the way he was so political and how he didn't want to tell me that press checks were just dumb and that the forward assist was useless.
Yeah, he was really diplomatic.
He danced around that really well. Yeah, he didn't want to insult me.
Yeah.
He doesn't know me well enough yet.
No, exactly. And next time he's on, be like, all right, Matthew, you're an idiot and you're a problem. Why don't we jump in some listener feedback, guys? Matthew, you want to take this first one from Ross?
Sure thing. He writes, Gentle Fiends.
Awesome. Seems appropriate.
This certainly does. Lots of people like locks. Anytime a brand is elevated to genericization, that's what he said. That's what he spelled. It's even red underlined. I didn't even fix it. Anyway, genericization. Sure. People say Glock. So I don't know what he's trying to say there. Basically, I think he means anytime somebody talks about a 9mm polymer pistol, they say Glock. So I have to agree with him. That does say something. That's impressive. So he says, I have fired Glocks and had a Glock break in my hand. Not a fan. It isn't fair to compare them with a modern 1911 style firearm. What we use today, SDI, Nighthawk, etc., are over-engineered and taken to a level of precision that J.M. Browning never imagined or designed for. That comparison would be like a VW diesel Jetta to a Formula One racer. Hence the illusion of a Glock being a more reliable pistol by design. Let me stop you right there. So if a modern 1911 is over-designed and taken to a level of precision where it's not reliable, and you put it up against a Glock who's designed to be reliable by having loose tolerances, I'm going to have to say yes, the Glock is a more reliable pistol by design.
No. If you take the original 1911 design.
Oh, if that's what he's saying, then.
And put it against an original Glock design.
Sure. If you don't want to shoot hollow point ammunition out of the 1911, that's great. Because they would only shoot ball ammo. So.
Zing!
I'm just saying.
Yes,
he continues on in futility, I might add. If you took the design delta of a World War I 1911 versus an STI 2011 and applied those new tolerances to a Glock, particularly, well, he didn't spell, he said particularly, but anyway, in the area of ammunition feeding.
I hope when you meet Ross for the first time, he just chokes you, like, on the spot. You're Matthew, and he just, next thing you know, it's like he's on. You're on the ground, and he's got both hands around your throat. That's,
I'm just not going to meet this guy ever, basically.
I recommend that. I've met him, and I see a choking in your future.
So he's saying, if I took a World War I 1911 and applied the tolerances of a new 1911 to a Glock, would you see ammunition feeding failures? Probably, yes.
Yeah,
but
that happens
because,
you put the aftermarket Glock barrels in them with the tighter tolerances and the fully supported chambers to improve what, I don't know.
The Glock bulge, I think.
Well, yeah, okay, but if you're not reloading, if it's a competition gun, like, anyway, they're putting aftermarket guns in Glocks with tighter tolerances all the time.
We've seen this with your tinkering with the Glock, right? Your Glock became less reliable as you tinkered with it more and more. And that was exactly this experiment, I think. It's true. A Glock does become less reliable as you tighten the tolerances.
Yep.
So does a 1911.
Yeah.
Or if you ever put hollow points in it.
Yeah, the manufacturers don't design them the way they do for nothing.
No. A precision STI 2011 is definitely a Formula One racer, and they have their place. I really do like them. They are very cool guns. It's not my type of shooting, so that's why I make fun of them.
Says the guy who almost bought
a 1911.
Yeah,
I was never going to buy like an STI 2011. I was going to buy like a Commander length 1911.
Oh, anyway. So that's okay.
Yeah, in 9mm, so that would really screw things up. anyway, he continues on. Price point-wise, there are many viable options from a Glock. Options instead of a Glock is, I think, what he meant to say there. He says Walther PPQ Navy, the Springfield XD, the Steyr M, the Smith & Wesson M&P, and et cetera. And yes, you're right, lots of other alternatives. The Ruger SR9 I would throw in there as well. However, there are also factors thrown into this, like Glocks are not natural pointing guns for him. the Walther HK and 1911s are. On the early episodes of Gunfighter Cast, Daniel Shaw would close out by asking his guests Glock or XD. Always liked that question, particularly hearing the rationale for their choice. Okay. In light of that, he continues on, here is the question. If you had $1,000 to spend on a pistol for CCW and IDPA / IPSC, etc., so this is a combination carry gun and competition gun, would you get 9mm or 45? What make and model, and why?
Easy.
Let's talk about that in a second. Ross wants to tell us what he would choose. He would choose a 9mm Walther PPQ Navy. He loves the gun. For $800, it's a steal. It shoots very well and is extremely accurate. It has the HK-style mag release that he likes, which Trevor hates. That's the one that's in the guard.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I much prefer 45 to 9, so I need to try an XDM in 45 to settle this one. P.S. For those who disdain the 1911 in favor of Glocks, when Glock's design is 100 years old, will people still use and revere it as much as 1911s today? Will folks in New Brunswick be debating Glocks versus Imperial Blasters in 2011? Oh. Yeah, I thought so. You should get that Jeff Reese fellow on the show more often. He's pretty funny, says Ross in Calgary. So let's go back
$1,000.
We got $1,000 for a competition / carry. Owen.
All right, Owen.
Easy. You find a good deal, you buy two Glock 17s.
I'm with you right there. Hands down.
I would get a Glock 17 and a Glock 19 if I was in America and had $1,000 to spend.
Yeah, in Canada, yeah.
It's at CCW, so yeah.
In Canada, it would just, I mean, if we ever did get CCW and Glock 19 still stayed at the price they still are now, I would just get a Glock 19 because it's the perfect size for conceal carry, in my opinion. It is also big enough to use in competition, in my opinion. So that's what I would get, Glock 19.
If the price changed, if it was like, okay, you can have CCW tomorrow, but the carry guns are now $2,000, fine, I'm in.
Yeah. Here's another really cool carry gun for Canada that's actually still legal right now with its current barrel length is the Boberg. It's like super small, but they're like $1,500.
Well, that's it. It's a novelty. I don't know if it's reliable. It's new to the market.
It's a whole new feeding system. The magazine's in front of the barrel, and the slide actually pulls the round out of the magazine backwards and then feeds it into the barrel. It's really weird.
I doubt I would carry one.
It would really have to prove itself before I would. But it would disappear on you, let me tell you. It's smaller than a Glock 19.
Yeah.
I can conceal my 17 quite well, so.
That's true. I mean, a 17 does disappear quite easily if you carry it right.
Wear dark clothes. Yeah. Wear the right clothes, wear
in the
right
waistband.
Holster. Yeah. So, Owen, will you take the next one from Doug, please?
Yeah.
Oh, first of all, Ross, I'm very sorry for making fun of you.
No, you're not. But you're going to be.
Are you coming to the charity shoot?
I hope he is.
I hope he's not, really. I'm in trouble.
I'll be there to protect you, Matt. Don't worry.
Thank you, Owen. I knew I could count on you to hold me down while he beats me.
The other thing I wanted to say when he was listing off, it has to be admitted that, I mean, Glock was kind of the first at the polymer pistol.
Was
I
not
think
the first.
I think
it wasn't the first, but it was the first marketing success.
It was the first popular one, the first one that really took off that did well.
And if you guys listen to the latest episode of Talking Lead, one of the reasons why Glock was so successful is the manufacturing process of a Glock was they were able to pump out huge numbers of guns with consistent quality.
Yep.
Yes.
Now,
my point was that other manufacturers have come a long ways.
Sure.
And while my preference is a Glock, I think this, Smith & Wesson's and the XDs, there's a lot of other options out there that are all good guns and quality guns.
The M&P, I haven't seen one lay down yet.
No, me either.
Yeah.
When we make fun of the 1911 versus a Glock, I think what we're doing is making fun of the 1911 versus every other polymer striker-fired pistol on the market.
Including the Steyr and the Walther.
Including the high standard, really, when you boil it down.
Yeah, I mean the high point?
High point, yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
yeah, high point, which is a low standard.
But. Yes, that's right. I think in 100 years they will still be talking about the Glock the same way people talk about the 1911 now.
Especially because I guarantee you they'll outshoot an Imperial Blaster. So
definitely.
All right, from Doug. He says, "Hey, Canadian gun dudes. I just finished my third episode of your show, 1911 versus Glock.
Here we go again.
Yeah. I was a range master at a large outdoor range in California in the mid-1990s. While I was an AR-15 1911 guy at the time, I noticed two things. Glocks and AKs never had any function problems on the firing line. I am an animal control officer and law enforcement firearms instructor. I had done all of my coursework with a Springfield 1911 A1. It had been a really reliable gun. In about 2008, I was able to procure a Gen 2 Glock 19 from the Sheriff's Department's close case evidence room." Nice. Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah, no kidding.
We use guns to dispatch injured wildlife. After getting a chance to play with the Glock, it grew on me. Soon after, I found myself buying a Glock 19 Gen 3, then a Glock 26 Gen 3. The Glocks have been my daily CCW carry here in Nevada for the past 5 years. I have also transitioned to AK since leaving California in 2001.
You would have to, because if you're still in California, there's no way you'd get an AK.
Yeah. I feel like I know this guy. He's telling me his whole life story.
Yeah, I like it.
Dates and everything. My 1911 and AR-15 sit idle. That's not right.
It's okay that a 1911 stays in the safe, but I really got to say the AR's got to come out sometimes. Although, that being said, if I could run an AK here in Canada and get the cheap surplus ammo for it, I'd probably be on board for that.
No. See, Matt, you got it wrong. The 1911 should not stay in the safe. They should be sold by more Glocks.
There you go.
It is funny how tastes change. I still do not understand the gun laws in Canada.
Neither do we.
Yeah, you can only take them to the range. Here in northern Nevada, an hour outside of Reno, it makes me feel feel fortunate to be able to... Oh, I can correct my own mistakes there, man.
I know. I hate it when he does it to me too, right?
I'll mute my mic. Keep going.
He's just like waiting for you to scrub. No. Actually, Owen, this is, yeah.
It makes me feel fortunate to be able to carry...
I'm not the only one.
Pistol or pistols and shoot unrestricted 24 hours a day and just down the street. I would encourage you guys to keep organizing and working on your gun laws. In the 1990s, I remember concealed carry was just a dream that seemed unattainable here. Even in California now, you can get a concealed weapons permit. Thanks for the show. Regards, Doug. And he has a note here. He included a picture of himself exploring the high desert with his AK in tow.
It was awesome. Did you see the picture?
Yeah, it was a good picture.
Yeah, I was jealous.
I think the best part of his email is where he says, "I would encourage you guys to keep organizing, keep working on your gun laws." And, I mean, somebody said on another show recently, when you, if you just disregard the law and say, "I'm just going to break it and not follow it," then you've stopped caring enough about it to change it. So yep. That's what you have to do. You have to, like, not say, "Oh, I'm just going to carry anyway," or I'm not going to register my guns, or I'm not, to all those people that didn't register their guns, they didn't help anybody but themselves. They had cared enough about the whole situation, then they would fight to change it. When you just give up and break the law, you don't care enough to fight to change it, and you're running the risk of situation not changing. Well, obviously the situation is not going to change, but you run the risk of, being caught and being a criminal. So, yep. I'm not articulating as much as
it sucks, you have to use the system.
Yeah, you can't just give up and say, "Well, I'm just not going to follow the law," because when you do that, then you don't care enough to change it.
Yep.
So, this next one is from David, and it was with regards to his 357 SIG questions that he sent earlier, and he says, "Thanks for the input. If Motor Mouth can stop interrupting, I wonder..."
I wonder who he's talking about there. Yeah, Owen, you should really be quiet. You should really let Trevor speak
more.
You
should be more considerate.
Yeah, Trevor. Owen.
Says,
"Seriously,
Trevor,
you got to be quiet."
He says, "Trevor, I took your input about the SIG and compared it to everyday practicality. I was the odd man out with my wife having 2 9mm and my 1 357 SIG. I opted to sell out for a Glock 19. It kind of makes sense. You got to..." He goes on to say why. "The cost of ammunition is much cheaper. The capacity, the size is what sold me on the purchase. Thanks again for your input. P.S. Is it a prerequisite to live in Canada to have a last name that is impossible to spell?
Yes, it is.
P.S.S. How's that 1911 treating you lately? P.S.S.S. Sorry, 2011. LOL. P.S.S.S. Can you share another S? Can you share to the lower states a few tricks on staying warm in cold spells? Thanks, David from Texas. Well, you see, David,
you got to be the small spoon.
Yeah, a lot of babies are born 9 months after winter. That's all I'm going to say. So, but I understand why you dumped the 357 SIG. Yeah, you're getting a more, well, you get some pretty compact 357 SIGs too, but yeah, you are getting more capacity. You are getting more affordable ammunition. You are getting a firearm that's easier to shoot. So, I mean, those are reasons enough, really. If you're kind of on the fence, that might
help. Now, he had a 357 SIG Glock.
Yeah.
I'm wondering why he didn't just get a 9mm conversion barrel for that Glock, because then he would have retained the ability to shoot his 357 SIG as well as 40 and then also 9mm.
Well, he would need a 40 barrel as well. But
well, yes, of course. But yeah, having that one frame would have allowed him to have three different firearms, something I had considered. I was thinking about getting the Glock 22 and then getting the other two barrels for it. But that's just too expensive. And then I just wouldn't have money for the other two calibers.
Yeah. Yeah. Like for sure, with the Glock 22, you can go in all those directions. Even if he had the full-size 357 SIG, which is the same size as the 17, same size as the 22, he could have did that as well. Just picked up a conversion barrel. So you're not doing it right, David. Still, you should have kept the 357 SIG and picked up a conversion barrel.
Yeah, what were you thinking?
I don't know.
Seriously.
You're supposed to check with us first.
Yeah.
Man. Time for an iTunes review. This one comes to us from A Must, and it's spelled EH-must. A fine time for Canadian listeners.
It says fun, but I'm only correcting you now because you made fun of me earlier.
And I put this in here and I typed it and everything. I'm tired. A fun time for Canadian listeners. When these guys are not interviewing one of the great guests they've somehow convinced to participate, the show focuses on three things. One, Trevor defending his modern 1911. Two, Matthew defending his warning shots. Three, Owen defending his LARPing. Yes, there's a lot of good-natured ribbing of each other, but every once in a while, these hosts get back on topic before, I see a rock! Squirrel! And just in case anyone does not know, Trevor open carried in the States one time.
Yes, he did.
Thanks, Amos. So, guys, please leave us a 5-star review, a 5-star rating, and a review on iTunes. It helps keep our show on the front page or very close to the front page, which is where we are right now. This one was pulled off of the Canadian feed, and what's new and noteworthy or what's hot, I think we're like just a couple in off of the front page. So that's really cool. So the more 5-star reviews we get, or more 5-star ratings we get, more reviews we get, the more the podcast gets noticed. So we would really appreciate it if you could do that. Make it funny if you want to hear it on the show.
If you want to hear it really funny on the show, put really big, complicated words in it. We'll get Trevor to read it.
Unlike Owen, who never stumbles on anything.
Neither do I. Wait, yes, I do. Yeah. It's just funnier this way. Come on, man. Roll with it. He just said there's good-natured ribbing. I had to throw that in there.
You know, making fun of each other's intellect. Wait, intellect? Is that? Did I pronounce that correct?
No, that's not the right way.
Oh, man. Shout-outs. The first one goes to Rossinator, who you made fun of tonight, which I don't recommend. He sent me the best book ever. It's, I don't have it in front of me. The title is...
That is an interesting title.
The Alaskan Bootlegger... It's the Alaskan Bootlegger's Bible, I think. And anyway, the whole thing is recipes on how to make booze. Like, you name it, and it's got the recipe in there for how to make it. Like, I'm going to be blind by next week thanks to this book. And Ross, I hope you don't want it back.
Because you're not getting it.
Actually, if he does want it back, I'll give it to Jeff when he's here for the charity shoot. To the boy. Yeah, so Jeff is coming all the way from Calgary to the charity shoot.
Cool. Ross, you might as well not come. It's a long drive, bud. Yeah. you're cool staying out there.
Ross, you can have Matthew's room.
Dang it.
to the boys at the Polite Society podcast.
I've never heard of them.
Formerly
the Politics and Guns. Is that a new podcast?
Formerly Politics and Guns. They're now called the Polite Society Podcast.
You guys get that, right? I'm sure you do, but do all the listeners?
I don't know. I mean, probably not. It's, you know, a polite society, an armed society is a polite society.
Yeah. I think it's clever. I like it.
It is clever. I think he should have worked in, you know, politely armed society or armed and polite or something. Polite society.
Well, he clearly should have asked you before he picked a name for his show.
But I told him. But I think he, like, yeah, he told me where to go.
Yeah, probably, and how to get there.
Anyway, the boys are at SHOT Show, him and the Giant Sticks and Rob. They're down there kicking it at SHOT Show, and they're thinking of us. They talked about us in their podcast. They made some connections with Canada Outdoor Life magazine, told them about us. They're interested in talking to us, according to this. According to what Stick said, this guy sounded really interested in looking us up and whatnot. So, hey, Outdoor Life Canada, if you're listening, what's up?
Sup.
Also,
that's almost as classy as the peace out we left with last week.
And they went and checked out some stuff for me. NEA apparently is nowhere to be found, but they did go check out the STI booth.
Cool.
Yeah. So, anyway, you guys got any shout outs?
Owen?
Nope.
All right. Well, I got one to Luke, of course, for hooking me up with some LHS holsters. I know I mentioned him already, but, you know, it's always cool to mention him twice because he's cool like that.
Bless his heart.
Yeah. And also to Ross. Dude, Ross, you're awesome. I just got to say, you're like the best listener ever.
The first time he wrote in, Owen was like, he signed it, Rossinator? Oh, I hate it when people do that.
Perfect. Now he's got two targets, so I feel a little bit safer.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway. Any other shout-outs?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, I'm going to take us out then. Be sure to join one or both of the National Firearms Associations, either the CSSA or the NFA. And if you're a host of a Canadian podcast and haven't renewed your membership yet, you suck.
I should get on that right away.
Also, guys, be sure to check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada website. It's an excellent forum for Canadian gun owners. They're running a really cool contest right now where you could possibly win a Tavor, which is awesome. Like us on Facebook. We're only at 917, which is like way more than the Polite Society podcast, just saying. And
I think also, Ross has more likes than that, though, doesn't he?
Probably.
Yeah, because Ross is awesome. Have I mentioned that?
He bought me sushi once. Did I mention that?
Oh, man. What a nice guy.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, a lot of sushi. Like, it was retarded. I don't think I spent that much on sushi in 6 months. Anyway, be sure to check out the other great shows.
I hate your tag name.
Way to not compromise your morals, Owen. That's it. I hate his tag name, whether he likes it or not.
My morals are compromisable for a penny.
Yep.
Or a good beating.
You know how copper wire was invented, right?
That's right.
Two Scots fighting over a penny. Yeah. Be sure to check out all the great shows on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, which features dozens of Canadian-based outdoor podcasts, as well as the Crusader Podcast Network, which features a baker's dozen of great American and Canadian pro-gun podcasts, and tons of great material on each of those networks. So there's something for everybody. Be sure to check them out. Thank you for listening. Take somebody shooting.
And I'm Ron Burgundy?
What? No, 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 no! What's next? Wood on ARs? I'm out. I'm gone.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.